Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. If you're building a SaaS business, achieving compliance with SOC 2, ISO 27001, or other in-demand frameworks can unlock major growth for your company and establish customer trust. However, this process is often time-intensive and costly. Vonta automates your compliance work, getting you audit ready quickly and saving you up to 85% of associated costs. And Vonta scales with your business, helping you continuously monitor compliance, unify risk management, and streamline security reviews. Join 8,000 global companies like Synethia, Flow Health, and Alica Bank that use Vonta to build trust and prove security in real time. Our audience gets a special offer of $1,000 off Vonta at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vonta.com/EU startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Sofia Velastegui, former Chief AI Officer at Microsoft and Fortune 100 executive who has worked with Apple, Google, and many other great companies. Sofia, welcome to the show. So awesome to have you.
Thank you for having me here. It's a great honor to be part of this EU Startup Podcast studio.
Amazing. So excited to have you. Sofia, your journey through, you know, top tech giants like Apple, Google, and Microsoft is truly outstanding. What sparked your passion for AI and machine learning, and how did you get started?
Yeah. Actually, as an engineer, I created hardware for computers and cell phone. Uh-huh. And I was talking to my parents about what I do, which is I make the equipment that makes the chip that's the brain of a computer.
Yeah.
And they had no idea what I was doing. Like, that made no sense to them in the early 2000s. So they asked me to send a picture. So I sent them a picture of myself in a laboratory gown from head to toe in front of industrial equipment. And they actually thought I was trying to be an astronaut.
Oh, really?
And so they, through Bible study and their church, told everyone that my daughter or their daughter will be the first Korean-American astronaut in space. Obviously, that was far from the truth. And so, but that helped me think about what is it that I want to do. And I want to make technology available for other people who love technology and what it could do for them.
Yeah.
But they themselves are not technologists. And so I pivoted into Apple in the early days of 2009 or so, where iPhone recently launched. And I noticed for every iPhone, there was unlimited apps.
Yeah.
And apps that did the best all had AI infused in it. And so that's when I decided I need to pivot my career to do more things with AI.
Yeah.
And I did that in Apple, and then even more so in Google, and then 100% in AI machine learning at Microsoft.
That sounds awesome. So Sofia, what's the coolest project you've worked on? Because there it sounds like there are so many, so probably hard to choose one. What was the coolest and what made it so special?
Yeah. One of the things that I'm very proud of and one of the coolest projects is joining Microsoft in 2017.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you, what people thought of Microsoft in 2017 was 180 degrees different than how people are thinking of it in 2024.
Right.
And so part of what Satya was trying to do is transform the company to be an AI company, as well as the culture transformation. And I was part of the executive cohorts that was brought in to go help that. So not only was there the technical aspect, which is going from a software company to an AI company, and specifically Gen AI, the first of its kind, but also the culture that needs to be changed so you can lean in further on the AI evolution that's happening.
That's super cool. Sofia, I asked you for the coolest project, but then I'm also curious, what's your most expensive mistake and what did you learn from it?
Well, I can't state about the most expensive, but I would say that AI products tend to be expensive because of the fact that they need an infrastructure investment associated with it.
Yeah.
And with Gen AI, as you know, with the NVIDIA GPU chip, it's very expensive. So billions of dollars are being spent in order to really develop that robust AI system. Mm-hmm. But what is really amazing is that even if it is a mistake or a challenge or more expensive, is that what is it that you're trying to do? What is the end goal you're trying to do? And how can you use experimentation to learn from the challenges you face to make that product that much better in the future?
True. I know. There is one story you were telling me about, like a very expensive bill that there's some communication. I know it was between Microsoft or Apple and Samsung, and you were involved in like one of the most expensive bills there in history.
This was a great memory on some of our past conversations.
Yeah.
This was like shortly after Samsung and Apple were in the core suing each other about the iPhone design and proprietary information. And shortly after the judgment, which was in favor of Apple, we had a major deal with Samsung, and it ended up being the most expensive deal that we had to bring forward to Tim Cook on the first year that he became CEO. So it was a very, very big dollar amount. And at that moment, I had the distinction of bringing the biggest deal size to Tim and Apple history at that time.
And you don't want to be that person, right?
That was expensive in order to do some of the advancement and the partnership. But that is sometimes that happens in our career and in what we face.
100%. Sophia, you emphasize the importance of customer obsession and unconventional connections. How can company leaders foster this mindset within their teams?
Okay. I really focus on three things that really help with that. Number one is lead by example. Are you asking questions about the customer? Are you interacting with the customer? Are you requesting feedback from the customer from your own team? So it's not just external, but it's how you engage with your team. Number two, it's like instill that customer-centric culture. What do I mean by that? Have it be part of their performance review for the employees. Have metrics and measure what customers are experiencing on different products. Because what happens is you'll find that, you know, all of us who are developers, we do not necessarily always represent or have experience similar to our customers. You know, in Apple as an example, and in Google, we're making consumer products. So anybody from the age 7 to 70. It was a long time since I was a 70-year-old, and I am not 70-year-old yet. So to understand and place myself in those users' shoes is very important. And then in the enterprise environment is when I was at Microsoft, it's like really understanding their industry and their unique challenges they're facing and seeing, making sure that the product has a configuration and features that can help them solve those problems.
Sounds good. What's the next big thing, AI breakthrough? What's the next big AI breakthrough, breakthrough that could shake things up and fundamentally, you know, change our world? And what's the maybe one thing in AI that no one seems to talk about?
Yeah. So one of the biggest technological changes is multimodal. And you're seeing a little bit about that. What do I mean by that? The different modes of information that are being placed into AI, whether it be text with ChatGPT or audio or video that's been like able to generate new content associated with it. But multimodal is bringing all the different types of information together and being able to feature it. And it's not just text, audio, and video. It could be Excel spreadsheet or other unstructured data. That's number one. Now, because of all the things that's happening with AI, it's not only going to disrupt in the technology, but it's going to disrupt the industry and the economy in the sense that we'll see more Gen AI and traditional AI being infused into a real-time application across all industry. So we saw aspects of that, and there was a little bit unknown that people would, every time you do an auto fill for an email draft or a text message, that was actually using AI.
Yeah.
But that is going to be leaning in further, and we're going to see that further personalization. And lastly, one of the industry I think is going to be so significantly changed is in the healthcare, of where they're going to investigate and leveraging AI in drug discovery itself. And being more effective in doing that will allow the time to market to be that much shorter, but also be personalized for people of all demographic and all background to have medicine that's further customized for their unique system and self.
Sounds amazing. Sounds all really exciting. Like this is, I don't know, like AI is the biggest, probably, for sure the biggest breakthrough of our generation, but I think like it might be the biggest in history. Sophia, you've recently had a chance to explore the European tech ecosystem in Amsterdam during the Next Web conference. And I know that soon you're coming back to London, right? Why does European tech seem to miss, you know, that extra edge compared to the US?
First of all, that was something I was curious myself, and we talked about that offline even further. But I would say that there are actually numerous European descent founders and leaders in the U.S. And they're doing incredibly well. Right, yes, but they're in the U.S.
Yeah.
And there's been a strong investment there. So it's not the people and their capability. It's more of the biggest difference that I'm seeing is some of the regulatory environment and the scale of what's happening. So U.S., there tends to be a more unified one country, United States view about regulation and investment philosophy versus with the EU, there is like multiple countries that are being represented. So every country has their own view on it. So to be able to do that consistently across all of the European countries is another thing. Actually, investment size and, I mean, excuse me, the investment growth is 2x in Europe over the US, but the investment size of the US is that much bigger. And that's a big difference. We talked about one of the most expensive situation, and it's the fact that AI did require investment of some of that infrastructure. But if the deal size are too small, they don't have all the investment that they need in order to do that. Like I give an example, in like some of the comparison for Europe is about, I heard numbers of 33 billion in AI, but in the US it's 120 billion. That's a big magnitude of difference. Another thing that helps, the last thing that helps is the fact that what are some of those major historical technical advancement? Where has that occurred? Most of them were in the US. AI is not just AI, big data scientists. You need the whole ecosystem, the PCs, the software, the internet, cloud services. But they were all created and developed mostly in the US. So there's a richer ecosystem there.
100%, Sophia. What do you think? So yeah, there's a lot to, there's a lot that Europe has to do to kind of change. I don't know if the gap will ever be closed, but I think the fragmentation of the European startup ecosystem is probably like one of the main reasons why this is happening. And also why there's like not more money going into Europe as well, because it's just hard to invest and build compared to the US setup. Sophia, you've been recognized as the most powerful female engineer by Business Insider. What's been the toughest challenge for you as a woman in tech, and how did you tackle it?
Yeah. When I started out, I was typically one of the only women in the room or in the various meeting. But one of the things that's very hopeful is I'm seeing a shift where there are more women, but also other diverse demographics that are being seen around the table slowly. And that leads to challenges in the sense that maybe they don't see some of the perspective that I see or really have representation of the features that also is supportive of other women. Like I give the example, Alexa was able from Amazon was able to recognize men's voice easier than women's voice because most of the trainings were developers who are men.
Yeah.
So those are things that happen, not just in the product, but in the environment. But one thing I'm very hopeful about is the fact that the Gen Z women currently and beyond, they are so tech savvy. They're like actually the most tech savvy group of people. And so that gives them a real opportunity to do more in AI and get more involved in AI. And I think that's very important that we have digital representation, not just in the product itself, but the users getting comfortable with technology, because technology has helped so many people to be even more effective at whatever that they try to do.
Yeah, I love it. I love this perspective because we always talk about, you know, how much more like female role models we need, but not actually, but no one is actually talking about like you also need this female group of users who's going to be using it. So it's like exactly, it's like the whole generational shift. I like it a lot. Sophia, let's talk about juggling, you know, a high pressure career like yours with your personal life. What do you do to, you know, keep the balance?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. We discussed about the fact that sometimes I find myself traveling 50-60% of the time. And the one thing is that I don't have a lot of quantity of time with my family, but I will make sure that whatever time I have, there's a quality in the time and really being focused and present and engaged with my family. I think that's super important. And one of the things that's also really helped even while I'm traveling is I have a book club with each of my sons where we talk about the books we read and the insights we get from the character going through the various challenges in the book. And that's also helped me be interested in some of the things they are also interested in.
Do you? Can you remind me how old are your sons?
My oldest is 16, my youngest is 12. And so we've had this book club for about 5 years now. And we read about one book a month per child. So it's been a lot of book reading.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
Especially like plane flights and so forth.
And so do you have any, what was, like, do you have like a favorite moment or like some, you know, a character that you really like to break down or your one of your sons did?
My youngest, well, both of my kids really love The Martian. I know there's a movie with Matt Damon, but the book goes in a lot more details about the challenges they he had and how like tenacious he was to basically live every day was a challenge in this like whole planet of Mars that's trying to kill him every day, and how he was able to motivate himself to do something and how very innovative he was about it. I thought that was funny. And also like the characters very funny and how humor is important in this very challenging situation to help you get through the humps.
Was there a big difference between, you know, a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old, how they were like deconstructing those books? Or is the 12-year-old following what the 16-year-old is doing, or how does it look?
Oh, well, I read the book differently at different age of their life. And so Sebastian read the book when he was around Julian's age, 12 or 13. So there were similarities about like, this guy is super funny. Is it really like one of the things they asked is Mars really that, you know, intense of a place, or is this exaggerated? And I was like, this is not exaggerated. It may actually be even worse than what's stated here. and another thing that they we talked about is like how he like almost died so many times and still lived on, and that was one of the risks of associated with it. And it's great that he, and another thing we talked about is the fact that the main character has this rich community with the other astronauts, but even the people on Earth that are really supporting him coming back to Earth and how important that was.
Amazing. Sophia, Here's a fun question for you. If you could have dinner with any leader, past or present, who would it be, and what's one burning question you'd love to ask them?
I actually went to a junior high school, 158 in New York City, and it was called Marie Curie, named after the famous physicist and chemist who won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Nice.
And it's we had to look into her. Yeah. And I looked into her, and she is so extraordinary. Not only did she was the first woman to get the Nobel Peace Prize, but she was also the first to get it in two different disciplines, physics and chemistry. And she had to, like, this is a world in 1903. Yeah. We talk about women in technology. There was nobody in professional work life at that time. And she was highly recognized, but also appreciated for her work. Right? And in an environment that is very, very challenging, she not only thrived, she excelled to the point of the highest order. She has, it's not just her, it was also her family. She, her family has the most number of Nobel Peace Prize in history.
True.
So that
great,
is
great pick. I love your pick. What would be the question you'd like to ask her?
Well, one of the questions I would ask her is, she really leaned into her intellectual curiosity. So like, how did you explore? Why were you curious about this topic? And remember, she got a Nobel Peace Prize in two different disciplines.
Yeah.
Like, what made her so passionate about this topic? And then how did she go about to solve the problem and explore something that's never been done before? I find that to be extraordinary. And she actually passed this down not only to herself, but with her husband, her daughter, the son-in-law. Like, there's a whole generation and family that she got so interested in this topic. How to maintain that for decades? She did this for 30 years or so before she passed away. But
it's amazing, Sophia. I'm now curious as well. Reflecting on your career and leadership journey, what's one lesson or, you know, piece of advice you wish you had just starting out?
Lean into your intelligent curiosity throughout your career. Can you ask the question again?
So reflecting on your, reflecting on your career and leadership journey, what's one lesson or piece of advice you wish you had, you know, when you were just starting out?
Well, it would be to lean into your curiosity, but also be intentional about your career and realize that you can't do it alone. You need an intentional community and network that'll support you in your career goals, right? It's been an amazing journey, because if you're curious and you're interested in something, you're passionate about it, it's less likely a grind and work. It's just something you find pleasant. But also recognize that you're in, there's many things you may be interested in, like with four or five things. But where is there a lot of like signals that saying this is going to grow, this is going to be a high growth area? That's an area to be a lot more strategic about how to focus yourself.
Amazing. Sophia, thank you so much for your time. It's been amazing to have you on the show. The conversation has been great and really insightful. I think people will love it. I wish you all the best, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's been amazing to talk to your community, both in Europe and around the world.